Okay, we begin here on the bottom of Samachet Amud Bet, four lines from the bottom. Amar Rava, Hilchuta Notein Tam Lifgam Mutar. When I have flavors that are problematic, then it is Mutar. So that summarizes what we've seen until now, that we believe that when the Notein Tam is not beneficial to the mixture, then it is Mutar. As the Baal Tosfot point out over here, Perush Af Bishratzim. That's true, even by Shratzim we say Notein Tam Lifgam Mutar, going against the suggestion before of the Gemara that Shratzim is a chidush, because even though they are ma'us, and people are bidilei minei, nevertheless the Torah is oser them, and therefore you would have thought maybe there's no concept of notein tam lifgam by Shratzim. Rava comes along to tell you that notein tam lifgam in general is mutar, and even by Shratzim is considered to be mutar. Now, v'achvara v'shichra lo yadana my time adurav. And with regards to a mouse that's found inside of the beer, I really don't know what Rav's reasoning was. Is it because he subscribes to the position that believes that when you have notein tam lifgam, like Rabbi Meir, who says notein tam lifgam is still problematic, that's why it's asur over here? That is the reasoning or the logic behind Rav's position, then the halacha would not be that way because we paskin notein tam lifgam is mutar. Or is it that Rav really believes notein tam lifgam is mutar? Or is the problem that an achbar inside of the shichra actually improves the flavor or does something that is beneficial to the flavor? Now that has implications we're going to see in a second with regards to vinegar as well, which is these are maybe more potent types of drinks, and therefore what normally would not be true about a mouse, by the case of beer and by vinegar, it might actually be beneficial or be something that is tastier. Now, Tosafot says, why don't we just ask a non-Jew to taste the item, and then we'll know whether it was mishabeach or not mishabeach the item. So the Baalei Tosafot say that what happens when the achbar, the sheretz, falls in there, it causes the beer to be stronger and more potent. The question that we have is that caused by the achbar, or is that caused by the normal fermentation of the beer, the normal process of the beer? And therefore, even if he tells us it's stronger, we still can't know from that as to whether the tam or the flavor of the achbar was what caused it. And that's why we have this safek as to whether it's notein tam lifgam, or it's notein tam l'shevach, and something that we can't discern. On the other hand, the Baalei Tosafot will point out that we do paskin like Rava, Damar notein tam lifgam mutar, af bishratzim, even by shratzim, and the nafkamina will be when it's enu ben yomo, when the flavor that's there is more than a day old, more than 24 hours old. At that point, we know it's notein tam lifgam, and then anything kiyotzebo is mutar af bishratzim. Anything like that, we have notein tam lifgam, and we know it's in a period of time, or in a situation where it's definitely notein tam lifgam, then it's going to be mutar. Yibayeluhu. Nafal the gochala, falls into vinegar, my, what's the din with regards to that? The Rashi over here says the nature of the question is, mi amrinan achometz tamo kasheh, v'enesheretz mefigola latet bo tam. The Rashi says, because of the potency of the vinegar, the mouse has no impact. The Rashi views it as being a neutralizing factor that the vinegar is so strong, or in essence, Rashi is really upholding the view of Rabbi Shimi Minarado that the Shratzim or the achbar is notein tam l'shvach, just a question of does it also have that ability inside the vinegar, which is very potent and might mitigate that beneficial tam that comes from a sheretz. But Tosafot doesn't like that view of Rashi because then you could have asked that about any surim shibet Torah. When they fall into vinegar, does the vinegar have a certain amount of potency that it mitigates any flavoring that would come from the item? Therefore, the Baalei Tosafot would say that it's unique or special over here to the case of vinegar and the achbar, which is, even though you might view normally the achbar as being notein tam lifgam, maybe the vinegar's potency makes it that it's actually notein tam lishvach in this case, and that it can convert a notein tam lifgam into lishvach, but it's uniquely associated with a sheretz. So Rashi sees the vinegar as being a mitigating force, and saying that then the mouse makes no difference. Baalei Tosafot would say that maybe the strength of the vinegar actually makes it that the mouse improves the flavor, and it's, even though mouse normally would be notein tam lifgam, over here because of the potency of the vinegar, maybe it's notein tam lishvach. Samarle Rav Hillel the Rav Ashi, They have an incident with vinegar where a mouse fell in, and Rav Kahana said it was problematic. So Amarle, Rav Ashi says back to him, that was a different case. Amarle, hau imartute imartat. So the way Rav Ashi explains that is that the mouse there was chopped up into small pieces. And as he notes over here, v'sheretz isro b'chadasha ketumato. And the isro consuming a sheretz is even the size of an atasha, even the size of a lentil, similar to the tumah that is conveyed by such a sheretz. So what you were afraid of is that when the mouse is cut up into pieces, then you have the possibility that he's actually consuming the mouse. When you're speaking about a whole mouse inside of there, you can remove the mouse, and the question is flavor. Is it notein l'gam, or is it notein tam l'shvach? On the other hand, if you're speaking about little pieces of the mouse, you can no longer get those pieces out, and then you have the problem of maybe he's going to consume it. Maybe he's actually going to swallow a piece of the mouse and eat a sheretz. The Ron does question Drashi's view over here because he says, why is the minimal shear or threshold meaningful in this case? Because we have a principle, chatzi shiur asur min haTorah. So why does it matter whether it's a kadasha or whether it's not a kadasha? Any piece of the sheretz is going to be problematic in this case. So the Ron gives an alternate explanation, which is the imartute imartat over here is an indication of the fact that the achbar has been in there for a long time, or the sheretz has been in there for a long time. And the question is, if it's been in there for such a duration that it's now coming apart in pieces, has it all of a sudden been in there long enough where it could actually maybe give a positive flavor in this case? And the Raivud adds in another possibility, which is the term imartute is usually used with the removal of hair, and over here it means the same thing, that the achbar only gives a negative flavor into the vinegar because of its hair. And therefore, if it's imartute imratat, the hair is missing, that's where the problem was, because then it's just the achbar itself without the hair, and that's not notein tam lifgam. Maybe that's notein tam lishvach. In addition, the Ron also questions why there's a problem here. Let us just filter out the item, take out the pieces that are there, and then you won't have a problem at all. That already the Achronim start to deal with in Shulchan Aruch. You have a machloket there between the Shach and the Taz. The Shach says that since Chadasha is the threshold for Sheretz, the Chadasha makes it into a birya, into a significant item, and therefore it is not batel. And in addition, you can't use a filter over here because the item has other particles or other thicknesses to it that won't allow it to go through the filter. The Taz and the Pre-Chodosh reject that view because there's no full Eber there. Even if you want to say that it's a Birya B'fnei Atzmah, it's over in Adasha, you still need a full Eber or something of significance to make it into a Birya. And therefore, they think the problem here is the fact that you have items that are discernible. Which is that we have discussed all along that when the Isur is Makiro, he can't discern it, then it is problematic. And over here, even though he can't discern it necessarily visibly, but when he touches it or feels it, he'll find parts of it in there, and that's already considered to be Makiro, and that's much more difficult than Tamo, and that's why it's not Batel Berov over here. And that's the major issue that they're trying to understand, is why is it not Batel Berov over here? What is unique about Imartute Imartat? And that is the different reasons that we're seeing both in the Rishonim and Achronim to explain the uniqueness of this situation in which the achbar fell into the vinegar. Now this leads the Balei Tosfot to ask a question and say something that's incredible chiddush from the Rabbeinu Tam. Balei Tosfot say over here, Yesh li tmoa achshav, we have to wonder today, Heich anu ochlim devash dvorim? How do we eat honey? Halo raglei hadvorim uravim badvash? Aren't the legs of the bees left in the dvash? So obviously he's not speaking about the commercial honey that we taste today or get in the store. They're speaking about literally when you're taking the honey out of the comb. And if you ever had honey from the comb, you know that there's wax mixed into it still. There's still other things that are inside of that honey. And along with the wax and the other properties of the honeycomb, you have the legs of some of the bees that are left in it. And even though it imparts a negative flavor, everybody agrees that if you're talking about the sheretz itself, then goes bad. Shratzim, as we saw in yesterday's daf, by definition, are pagam. Their whole existence is something that's disgusting and nobody has any interest in eating them. Nevertheless, the Torah says they are sur. So the Tam you can speak about, Tam Lifgam, Tam Lishvach, does that have impact? When you're talking about the Sheretz, everybody agrees that the Sheretz itself is ma'us and unappealing, and yet it's still a sur. So here you have real pieces of the Sheretz. You're not talking about the flavor of the Sheretz, you're talking about a piece or a leg of the Sheretz. L'chein nira l'rabinu tam, t'vadai ragleh dvorim, kevin t'atzamot b'almanin hu mutarim. Because they are bones, therefore they are mutarim, which is somewhat questionable, but he says because they are considered to be bones, they're mutarim, t'ha atzamot torim. When it comes to the bones, even of non-kosher animals, they are torim. Atzamot ha-chamor tehorot. When you're speaking about a donkey, which is a non-kosher animal, despite that fact, the bones are tehorot. Raglei advarim ki atzamot ha-chamor. And the legs of the bees are no different than the bones of the chamor. So here, the phraseology is slightly different. Here he's trying to say that the din is the same, but if you take that more loosely, maybe he's saying that the legs of the bee are similar to the bones of the chamor. Not that they are actually bones. But Hadam Rinan, Evarim, Ein Lam Shi'ur, what about the fact that when we speak about limbs, we say there are no Shi'ur to limbs, Afilu Pachot Mikazait Minamet, Pachot Mikadash Minasheretz, that even lower than those thresholds are still problematic, Hainu Linyan Tuma. That's with regards to Tuma, they're problematic. Gon Deika Basari Lavei, if there's flesh on it. Ha'lav Ochi, Torim, if it wasn't for that, they'd be Torim. If it comes to eating them, doesn't matter as long as you're below the thresholds that are required for sheretz, you can eat these items. And that is the basic heter that certain parts of non-kosher animals, we're going to get to this when we learn the gemarot in Chulin, that bones and certain aspects of non-kosher animals, they are also kosher. And that might have influence with regards to gelatin and other things that are made from the bones, which may be kosher, even though they come from non-kosher animals. Question is what we're choshesh for, or why we do or don't eat them. That's a separate issue. But over here, he's using that same principle to say that the legs of the bees that are found in the honey are fine. They're only atzamot. They're below the threshold that you need. And even though they're evarim, they have no basar. They have no flesh on them. Since they have no flesh on them, then they are considered to be mutarim ve'achila. And here the Rabbeinu Tam says that you can eat the honey that has the legs of the bees inside of the honey, which to us, I'm sure, is shocking in many ways, but that's how he paskin with regards to this matter, based on what we are seeing from our Gemara, as well as the Mishnayot that he's bringing from Tarot. Ravina Sarah the Shurei B'mei Avachad, Ravina thought that we should think about this in a relationship or a ratio of 100 to 1. It's not clear if he's talking about Shechar or Chalav, he's talking about the beer or the vinegar, although from the Balei Tosafot, it seems to be that he thinks that they're speaking about Shechar here, and that would be 100 to 1, again, because either the potency of the item increases the intensity of the flavor, or because the Sheretz is more problematic, it gives over more flavor. You can't use the normal 60 to 1 or the no Dain Tam. We have to go to a higher threshold. That higher threshold will be 100 to 1. The truth is, we have higher thresholds than that. We have 200 to 1 by Kilei Akerem, by Orla. But that's because by Kilei Akerem and Orla, there is an Isur Hana'ah that is associated with them as well. Over here, we're talking about things that only have an Isur Achila, not an Isur Hana'ah. The highest threshold we have is by Truma, which is 100 to 1. So what he's saying is, let us move up to a higher threshold. And for that reason, we will allow it to be Mutar as long as you reach that higher threshold. And that's the Bayit Tosfot Sev, Yesh Lamar Desfile. Kevin Shetamo Chazak B'Sheikhar. Yes, because the power or potential of this to flavor inside of the beer is significant, because it has a strong taste or a strong flavor, then we're going to compare it to truma, the davar yavesh, truma with dry goods, or 100 to 1 is significant. And that's why he picks something that is of a significant number, a higher threshold. He says at that higher threshold, that would be fine. Maybe they're similar to spices inside of a pot, where their flavor is not wiped out. This goes to questions I think that were raised over here. There's certain spices, there's certain salts with very small amounts that can have a disproportionate impact on the flavor of the item. He says that spices, even though they're below the thresholds, they still are problematic. Even if you have 100 to 1 with regards to certain spices, that's not enough to eliminate the flavor of the spice. It happens to be that they use the word truma over here, but truma is not the significant aspect here. The tavlin is the significant aspect, which is that the concentration or the potency of certain spices is such that even small amounts will have disproportionate effects on the flavor. And in that case, they're not batel. Now, the way the Gemara reads is, delo batel tamayu, that their flavor doesn't go away, makes it sound like you can never be mevatel these spices. The Bali Tosafot say, don't read it that way. He says, kitavlin upilpilin. You see that the Bali Tosafot had a different gear, so they had tavlin and pilpilin in there. Delo batel tamayu, lo besamech, belo bekuf. Not at 60 to 1, not at 100 to 1. Sharei ma'at tavlin, notain tamik dera gdola. They could affect a very large pot. Aval, ein lo mar delo batel klal. Don't come to the conclusion that they're not batel at all. They're amongst the items that the Gemara considers bid notain tam. Not in the list of things that are osir even with the smallest amount, which means that they're not batel. Because, and we brought the Gemara earlier on, Samach Vav Amin Aleph, where we spoke about the different types of spices, the spices that are mitzdareif, not mitzdareif. Over there, it's clear that the Gemara believes, and the Tosefta believes, you can be mevatel them. So all Tosafot says is you can't use the standard rules of bittul of 100 to 160 to 1. You have to use the rule of no tein tam. Does it give flavor? Does it not give flavor? If the flavor is no longer discernible, then they are batel. But absent that, you can't use any one of these steadfast rules of 60 to 1 or 100 to 1. They're just not going to work in this case. And for the same reason he's pointing out, how are you so sure when the mouse falls into the sheikhar that 100 to 1 is sufficient? If you treat the mouse like tavlin, that means that it has disproportionate flavoring impact. If that's the case, you can't say 100 to 1. It's just not going to be enough. You have to use no tein tam. Rav Achai, shir chala b'chamshin. It's interesting, he went in the other direction. He said with regards to vinegar, 50 to 1 was the threshold. And the way that Rashi terms it over here is, came into chometz tamo kasher. Potency again of the vinegar, lo bayishitin libetule. You don't need 60 times. V'afil b'chamshin lo yivei tamo. Even at the level of 50, the strength of the vinegar doesn't allow flavor to affect it. You need something with much stronger flavor to affect the vinegar. So it's almost the opposite of what we were saying before. The Gemara is going in both directions with regards to vinegar. That's what Tosafot points out. Tema. Mashakot of Le'el wrote, se lachmir bo. Afil yoter misamach v'kaf, v'kan mekyo bo. Before we were saying that the potency of the vinegar is saying, be machmir for 100 to 1, 60 to 1, all of these other possibilities. And now all of a sudden, the Gemara is going the other direction and saying, oh, vinegar is so potent that you don't even need 60 to 1, you can use 50 to 1. Yishlamar, mishum tasar, b'chalo lo ashpach, kokach, kamo b'shichwa. Vinegar doesn't give as good a flavor, kamo b'shichwa, like it does in beer. And that's why we said before that the 100 to 1 was referring to beer, where the flavor is stronger or better. Whereas by vinegar, it is mitigated by the potency of the vinegar. Rav Shmuel, b'redravika, shir b'shichwa b'shitin. He assessed that when it comes to a mouse inside of the beer, then it's 60 to 1, which is your standard 60 to 1 that you would use in other cases. Here's the conclusion of the Gemara. Doesn't matter if it's vinegar or beer, 60 to 1 is the threshold. And as the Balei Tosfot say over here, means perish b'shichwa v'chalo, or 60 to 1. The Baha quotes from the Yushalmi that asheretz is lo batel kiim be'elef. It needs 1,000 to 1. It says, v'talmudeinu ikar. That's what we have here in the Babli is ikar. The bato b'shishim kishari isurim. That has a din of bato b'shishim like all other isurim. And the other diak that we have here is dafka, that it fell into sheikhar or chometz. Do we say that it is notein tam l'shvach? Falls into any other liquid, we would say that it's notein tam l'fgam. And then you won't even need shishim in order to mitigate it because it's notein tam l'fgam in those items. And then it would be mutar, like the psak of Rava before, that notein tam lifkam is mutar. V'chein kol yisurim shebetorah. And so too is the principle with all yisurim shebetorah. That's a very difficult statement because you have many yisurim in the Torah that have different shiurim. To say all shiurim in the Torah are benotein tam or 60 to 1 is really not a proper statement. So here Rashi already starts to give you some hint of how to correct that issue. Rashi says over here, v'shishim, v'chein alocha rovachat b'Yisrael. The min she'ein mino b'shishim. So Rashi already qualifies the statement. It says, when he say chol yisurim shatorah, means all yisurim that are min she'ein mino. Anytime it's min she'ein mino, then 60 to 1 is a sufficient bito, or noten tam is the factor. with the one exception, chutz mi-chametz. Chametz on Pesach, based on the reading of the Gemara in Pesachin that we saw before with regards to Rav's statement, it's also b'mashu, even min she'enu mino. But Rashi points out that that's only a chumra dirabanan. And he says that that is chametz gzeira, she'enu mino, otu mino. That's because they were gozer and enu mino for mino, but that means not underlying that enu mino would have been noted in time by chametz as well. It's just a gzeirat chachamim or takanat chachamim that says that enu mino is also b'mashu. But that means fundamentally the principle is true. Anything that is min she'enu mino is no tam 60-1, and the one exception of chametz is a gzeirat chachamim. But this also goes back to the Rashi that we saw in Samach Vav Amud Aleph. If you remember there was a Rashi in Samach Vav Amud Aleph that seemed to say, we paskan halacha, that anything that is min b'mino is no tam. Chutz mitevel v'yayin nesech. The exception of tevel v'yayin nesech. So Rashi back there says that no tam has application not only to min she'enu mino, it also has application to min bimino. He's paskening, like we're going to see a machloket amoraim that's coming up. Over there, we already saw in the Hagota Bach that he questioned whether that was really Rashi's opinion. And the Masorah Shas notes that Rashi over there is soter, what he says in Masechet Chulin. And for that reason, the Bach thought the Gersa on this Rashi was incorrect. And it was actually a view of the Rabbeinu Tam that got imposed into Rashi. Because here you see Rashi is pretty clear. He thinks min b'mino is b'mashu, even by chametz, even by other things. He thinks only no tein tam is relevant. The only time no tein tam is relevant is min she'enu mino. And that goes against what Rashi said on Samach Vav Amud Aleph. And that's why many believe that that piece in Rashi in Samach Vav Amud Aleph is not Rashi. It's the Rabbeinu Tam's view and not Rashi's view. And that is corroborated by the Rashi in other places in Shas, where he believes that min b'mino is not b'notein tam, but min b'mino is b'mashu. Alright, now we move on to the Mishnah, dealing with the issue of novi kuchavim, spending time with your wine. How much time does he need in order for the wine to be problematic? Ovi kuchavim, sheyam avir im Yisrael kadei yayim imakom l'makom. You have an ovi kuchavim who's transporting barrels and pitchers of wine along with a Jew. Imaya b'cheskat hamishtamer. If the wine is considered to be guarded or protected, mutar, then it's not a problem. Im hodio shu maflig, if he tells him that he's taking off, the Jew says, I'm leaving now, then kidei shiyishtom v'yishtom v'yigov. So yishtom comes from the word, you might be familiar with it in Torah by Bilam. In Bilam it says that he was shtum ha'ayin. Shtum ha'ayin means that he has an open eye, or that an eye that does see well. So that here means, yishtom means that he's able to open a hole. V'yishtom, that's from the word satam, means to seal the hole. V'yigov, and that it will be then able to smooth it out and dry. So if he's going to basically drill a hole into the sealant of the item, so after drilling that hole, he's got to replace whatever the hole was. He has to have enough time that it dries and looks like the other materials that are there. So in order for him to get access to the wine, this is the amount of time he needs for him to be able to do it. So you have to leave him that amount of time in order for there to be a chashash that he actually came into contact with the wine. Rishim Gamliel believes that you can't drill a hole in. You need to take off the whole sealant. That's the way it works with cheres or kli cheres. When you seal it, if you start to break the seal and around it, then the entire thing cracks. If the entire thing cracks, the only way to then deal with it is to take the whole thing off and replace the whole thing. So Rabbi Shimon Gamliel gives you a larger window of time in which he'll give him the ability to access the wine. So what we're saying here is, im hodio, if he lets him know, and Rashi says letting him know means simply that you're telling him that you're going away, and then you do stay away that amount of time, although the Ravid says that this is only applicable when you actually tell him where you're going. If that destination gives him sufficient time to do one of these two things, according to Tanakama, drill a hole, seal it, and then dry, or according to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, it's enough time to take off the entire seal, reseal it, and have it dry, then you have to be choshesh that he did that, and that the wine is problematic wine now, that it could be yayin nesech. On the other hand, if he has less than amount of time, then you don't have to worry about it, because you can see the seal is still there, and you know that he didn't take anything from the wine. So it would seem from the Mishnah that there's im hodio is that if you let him know. That means if he didn't let him know, then that's considered to be mishtamer. Although the first question in the Gemara will be, what does it mean, mishtamer? And that's why all the Rishonim are trying to understand what's the Gemara's question, meaning that from the Mishnah, the diuk would be, if you let him know you're going far away, you have a problem. You don't let him know, sounds like there is no problem, because as Rashi notes here, and the Gemara will make it clear, demirtat, he's afraid that you're going to come back at any time. This is the concept of a shomer, that is yotzei v'nichnas. He comes in and out, you don't know when he's going to come, you don't know when he's going to go, and therefore people are afraid to cheat, because kol sha'at hatshtahiyati. Any moment he's going to say, here he's coming now, and he's afraid to do anything. So only if he has that sufficient window of time in order to deal with the sealant, is there a problem. Now in terms of the sealant, you have what is the normal corking of the item, and besides the normal corking of the item, you put on something that seals it even more so, because it's going to be transported. You don't want any opening. You don't want any possibility that the corking is going to come out. So that's what we're not speaking about, the corking that's going in. That anybody can pop out and put back in. That's not hard to do. The question here is, if you have the sealant that's around that corking, that's the question here. Can he break that sealant, and will he break that sealant? And the answer is yes, if he has enough time in order to replace the sealant. Whether you have to have a hole or the whole thing, that's the machlok between the Tanakhama and Rishim Gamliel. Haminiach yeno bikaron ubisfina. Person who puts his wine to be transported onto a wagon or onto a boat. Balachlo bikapandria. And then he took a shortcut. The word kapandria is found in the Gemara and Megillah. You're not allowed to make the Beit HaMikdash, the Beit HaKnesset, into a kapandria. Nichnas limedina. He went into the city. Verachatz, and he went to the bathhouse. Now remember, in their day, the bathhouse was a big undertaking. It's not like just going to take a shower. It means that he's going to spend some time there in the bathhouse. So there definitely is enough time for all of this to take place, which is the going to open it up and then to reseal it. Nevertheless, mutar. It is still mutar because he never told them how far he's going. He never told them what he's going for. The guy has no idea that he went to the bathhouse and he's not going to return so fast. Now, the question about the kapandria, that he took a shortcut, that is because the people are not aware of how close he is to this location. And they don't know the area, and he took a shortcut that brings them back faster. So they're worried about the fact that he could show up at any moment because of that route that he knows into the city. And so their fear of him showing up, even though, and he himself knows he's going for a while, they don't know that. Imodio, on the other hand, if he tells them that he's going to the Merchatz, Shumaflik, that he's leaving for a while, Kadeshi Ishtom, Vistom, Vigo, that's the Tanakhama's view again, that time to make a hole, seal the hole and dry. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, Kadeshi Iftachet the Chavit, Vigof, Vitigov. And Rabbi Shimon Gamliel again says it's open up the entire seal, reseal it, and then have it dry, because now he's aware of how long you're gone for, and he's not afraid of you showing up. If it's this window of time, then we worry about the fact that he actually did this. You leave the goy in your store, minding the store for you. Even though you're going out and in, that's fine because of the concept of mirtat. The fact that you're yotzei v'nichnas makes it that there is a mitigating factor that will dissuade him from doing this because he's afraid of being caught. Then if again, if he tells him or gives him the information that he's disappearing for a certain amount of time, Kadeshi Ishtom, Vistom, Vigof. Again, the Tanakhama believes the amount of time to make a hole, Rabbi Shimon Omer, Kadeshi Iftach et Chavit, Vigof, Vitigof. Open up the whole thing, and then reseal the whole thing. The Gemara will obviously ask the question, why do I need all these cases? They all seem to be telling us the same thing, which is that if you tell him the information, it's problematic. If you don't tell him the information, then it's fine. Hayahu Kali Mola Shulchan. He invited the goy over to eat with him. He leaves pitchers of wine on the table. Vilagin al hadulbiki. Over here, it's dulbiki. If you look in the Girsat Aruch that's brought here in the Masoda Shas, he says dalpiki, and then it would match up with the modern Hebrew word dalpik, which is like a cashier's desk or a place where you have something that's set up on a structure. So that'd be the same thing over here. It's a wooden table or a sidebar buffet, credenza on the side, on which you keep the wine that is not being served in the meal, but wine that is being kept around because it will be used at a certain time. And then the Jew walked out of the room and left him. Mashal shulchan asur. What's on the table, you can assume that he drank from. He had permission. He was invited over to eat at this table. He was given wine to drink. You can assume that he touched the wine that was on the table because there's nothing that would dissuade him from doing such. He's not afraid. If the guy walks in and sees him pouring wine, he's going to say, well, you invited me over. Didn't you invite me over to drink? Why would he be fearful at all of drinking? Shala dubaki mutar. That which is on the credenza, on the sidebar, that is mutar because he didn't have permission to touch it. If he goes and touches it, the Baal HaBayis would say, what are you doing over there on that wine? So that he's afraid to touch. Go ahead and dilute wine and drink freely. Even the stuff on the sidebar is problematic because the wine that's on the table is already diluted. That was already prepared for eating. If he says to him, go ahead and dilute whatever you want, it's almost as if he's giving permission to take from the other wine. Or the goy will not feel bad about taking it because if the Baal HaBayis comes back and says, you told me to go and take what I want and dilute what I want. And then he feels that extra permission gives him the right to do it, and he won't feel like a thief if he's caught doing it. He'll just say it. Even if the Baal HaBayis gets upset at him, he said, you told me this, and he won't feel bad about it. Chaviot tuchot asurot. You find open barrels, they are problematic. Stumot mutarot. On the other hand, if they're sealed, they are fine. Kedei shiftach vigof vitigof. So the question here, is this modifying the entire Mishnah, or is this just modifying the last case? Which is, in the last case, if he gives him permission to be mosaic, the wine, does that mean that not only is the wine on the table and the wine on the dopeki problematic, but even other barrels of wine that are found in his house, are they problematic? And the answer would be, if they are open, they are surot. If they're stumot, then you have to have the same threshold that we had before, which is the amount of time it would take him to open and close them up. So that's if he's left in the house all alone. These are the thresholds for that. And that would mean that even chavit tuchot, this guy can make all the wine in the house a sur, not just the one at the table, not just the one on the sidebar, but even the barrels that are inside the house. Now, tuchot, most believe that tuchot doesn't literally mean open. Doesn't mean an open barrel, almost everybody would agree, is a sur right away, because he can touch it, quote unquote, inadvertently. If the person sees him touching the wine, he can just say, oh, I was putting it down, I was carrying it, I touched it. He can make up a reason and he could dismiss any claims against him. The other hand, if you speak about tuchot, that it's closed but not sealed. You have the corking in there, but there's no sealant around the corking. Then he can pop open the cork and put it back in. Over there, he might have some fear if there is someone there or if there's no permission. With permission, he won't feel bad at all and he'll open up that corking and put his hand in there and take it out. That's why it's a sur. So now, either you have to read it as belonging to the latter part of the Mishnah here. The Raivid thinks that Tuchot applies to all the cases in the Mishnah, with the exception of the first case, because there he has an easy way of coming to contact or touch it if they are Tuchot. But that also might relate to the Raivid's view of what Tuchot are, which is that means it's completely open, as opposed to the view of the Ramban, that open doesn't mean literally open, it means not sealed. Or you have to suggest that it applies to the whole Mishnah. In all these cases, if you give him open barrels, they're asurot. But if you give him barrels that have no sealant on it, you can assume that he opened up the cork and he put the cork back in. No trouble for him to do that, unless there is fear. If there's a fear of you showing up, he will be afraid to pop open that corking and put that corking back. Just the time frame will be shorter. So that means that if he feels comfortable, the time frame for him to feel comfortable to pop the cork and put it back in is going to be smaller than the time frame for a sealant that's there, and that gives you, buys you more time. And that'd be the difference between tuchot and stumot, is how much time you have. If he has time to deal with them, they'll both be asurim. If there's no time, then they'll both be mutarim. That means that even a chavit tuchah, that's only a corking, will be mutar as long as he's afraid to open it up. So that's the view of the Ramban, that the Mishnah is read in that way, that the tuchot applies to all the cases in the Mishnah. The Raivid and others, on the other hand, think that this is only modifying the latter part of the Mishnah. And again, that might have to do with their difference in the view of what Tuchot means. If you think Tuchot means completely open, that's why you might think it doesn't apply to the first case, the Mishnah. What does it mean, Becheskat Mishtamer? So here you have a problem already. What do you mean, Becheskat Mishtamer? The Mishnah described to you. Why is it Becheskat Mishtamer? It's because seemingly you didn't tell him the information that you were leaving. Because imhodio is the next line in the Mishnah. If you tell him the information, then it's not mishtamer anymore. What's the Gemara asking? Eichi mishtamer. So you can already see the Balei Tosafot ask that question. Mitema, my boy, eichi dami, va mitani seifa imhodio. The Mishnah told you, Im Hodio gave you that information. Shumaflik, Michlau de Reisha below Hodio. That the inference is that the Reisha is where you didn't tell him the information. That's exactly what the Cheskat Mishtamer is, because you didn't tell him the information. Beish Lamar, the other Abba, Miktoni Seifa, Vim Hodio, Asur, Mashmai Dim Kain Reisha, the Tani Becheskat Mishtamer, Hainu Shimur, Chashiv Tvei, Milo Hodio, Shimaflik. Says that Cheskat Mishtamer seems to indicate that there's something more here than simply you didn't tell him the information. Had you had the diok here, that's the remainder of the Mishnah. The remainder of the Mishnah doesn't talk about Cheskat Mishtamer. It says if you tell him the information, you don't tell him the information. That's the diok out of the remainder of the Mishnah. The fact that the Reisha adds in the terminology of Cheskat Shimor sounds like there's more here than simply you didn't tell him the information. Sounds like there's something extra that is being done over here, and that's what the Gemara is asking, according to the Baalei HaTosafot. You see in Rashi's interpretation of the Cheskat Mishtamer in the Mishnah, that he thinks that the Gemara is asking how much time do you have when he doesn't know how long you're leaving for. How much latitude does that give you when you don't disclose to him that you're going or where you are going? And that's what the Gemara is looking for. On the other hand, the Baalei HaTosafot say that it sounds like from the Mishnah that there's an additional aspect of Shimur here, and that's what the Gemara is trying to understand. It's not just that he didn't tell him the information. There's something more over here that makes it Becheskat Mishtamer. Although the Ramban, like we discussed, it's a sheet in the Mishnah, is that the first case is in a case where they are Ptuchot, and he doesn't have to worry about the barrels. But how can you say that when he's handling the barrels? In the latter cases of the Mishnah, he's not handling the barrels. You can understand why maybe Ptuchot are Mutarot, but over here, where he's handling the barrels, how come Ptuchot are considered okay, or why do they have a Cheskat Shimur? Zeichi Dami b'Cheskat Mishtamer, Kedetanya. Hare, Shayu Chamarav Upoalav to Unim Teharot. His workers and his donkey drivers were taking his Taharot. So these are things that he's trying to keep Tahor, whether it's Truma, Tevel, things that he wants to keep Tahor. Afilu Hiflikmehen Yoter Mimil. Even if he took a Roman miles of distance from them and he's left them, Teharotav Teharot. They remain Tahor. Vimamarlehem Luchu. Vani ba acharechem. If he says, you guys go ahead, and I'll be following up with you, I'll catch up with you. Kevan shnit alma eino behem, taharotav tmeot. Then once he loses sight of them, all the tarot are problematic. Mara asks, maishna reisha, umaishna seifa. What's the difference between the reisha and the seifa? If we believe in the seifa, they're willing to touch it, then why don't we say the same thing in the reisha? They're willing to touch it. If as soon as they're out of his sight, we believe they're going to touch it, then in the first case too, why don't they say it when he's out of sight that they're going to touch it? And as Rashi points out, you can't answer here the way that you answered in the Mishnah, which is the difference between whether he disclosed the information or didn't disclose the information, because as Rashi says over here, the hakachazlu denoga. It's talking about where he's in direct contact with the item, according to Rashi. And they're not sealed barrels or sealed items. And if they're touching them and they're not sealed, here they're going to have to be tamei. But rather, we're speaking about where he's in direct contact with the item, according to Rashi. And therefore, him not being there or being there makes no difference if they're in direct contact with the item. And therefore, for Rashi, the real question is, why is it mutar in the reisha? Because they're in direct contact with these items. How can you say that they are teorim? Whereas the Baalei HaTosafot suggests that this is different than our Mishnah, because here the case is that the peirot are found in barrels that are open and not barrels that are sealed. And therefore, since it's so easy for them to come into contact with them, just the lack of disclosure over here is not going to be sufficient as a reason to say that they didn't come into contact, that they are not tameim. Because it doesn't take any effort, it doesn't take any time for them to gain access or to touch these items. Therefore, there should be no distinction between the reisha and the seifa as to whether he tells them that he's leaving them or whether he doesn't tell them. As soon as he disappears from visibility, there should be a problem with these items. Amar Rav Yitzchak, or Amar Rav Yitzchak Nafcho, reisha b'mitaher chumarav upo'alav. The reisha is a case where he made sure that everybody was tahor, meaning that he prepared everything and he put the workers through a whole process of being mitaher them. And therefore, the workers know that he's invested in keeping this stuff tahor. So he's matbil them. He makes sure that they are tahorim. That's the case. We're not really so worried about their touch because they are tahorim. Or says, Yochi Seifa Nami. Well, what about the Seifa? If they're all tahorim, then in the Seifa also, they know he's matbil about this. They are tehorim, and if they touch it, it's not a problem. Why in the Sefer do you say it is a problem? Ein amaretz makpid al magach chaveiro. You're right. As far as their contact with the item, they're not problematic because they are tehorim. But as far as a third party coming and touching the item, they're not going to stop somebody else from doing that. Then Gemara says, that's the case, then why don't you think the same thing in the Reisha, that somebody could come along and touch it and they won't stop them? So Amarova, Vivodahem, Derech Akalton. It's a case where can come to them in a indirect manner. And as Rashi describes over here, Shabalabai Yecholavo Derech Akalton, Demirtat Hashtaati. It's a case where the Balabayit can surprise them. And so that's the issue here. It's not just the fact that he could show up any time. It's also the fact that they don't have visibility to see him coming. As opposed to the Seifa, where they're able to nit alei min ayin. He's out of sight, and they're not worried about him. Over here in the Reisha, they're worried about him leaving because he suddenly disappeared, and he suddenly showed up. I mean, that they don't have enough visibility to say that he's not right here, or he's not right behind us, or he's not right next to us. Again, if there is a way for him to come back and they just don't know, that's not enough. Because they can see him coming. They have visibility to him coming and that gives them enough warning. Again, this is different because this is Tarot. But Tarot is a very short time frame. They just have to touch it for it to be problematic. When you're talking about the wine, they need time to unseal it, seal it. So all of that would have to be there. Even if they can see him coming, and that's not enough time to reseal it and to dry, then you need more time. But the concept is that if he can't surprise them, that's enough. That's called Cheskat Shimur. If he can come up to them without them knowing, or he can appear to them at any moment, that's called Cheskat Shimur, because then they're always afraid. Why don't you say the same thing about the Seifa? Because he gave them information, which is, you go ahead and I'll catch up to you, they rely on that. They sufficiently feel secure at this point that he's not coming this moment. It's not that he's going to surprise them up there. He's fallen behind. And he's going to take time to catch up to them, and that gives them the sufficient time to deal with it. So how he expresses the information to them is important. If he tells them the information in a way that makes it unclear when he's going to show up, and also there's accessibility for him where he can pop up on them at any time or any moment, they're always afraid, then they're not going to do anything. On the other hand, if he gives them enough information for them to be secure that at that moment he's not going to come, then we have to worry that they took advantage of that moment. And again, by Tarot, that is a small window because it just means they have to touch it. On the other hand, when you're talking about items that are sealed, then you need a larger window of time in order for that to be the case. Now, the Gemara discusses the different cases in the Mishnah. Why do we need all these cases? And quotes the Mishnah, and it says, Vitzricha. We need all these cases. Titan Ovid Kuchavim. If we were just talking about the Ovid Kuchavim, the Savar Dumaati Vichazilei, then in the first case, by the case of the Ovid Kuchavim is transporting with him, there he can say that he's afraid that the guy's going to come at any moment. Aval b'karon b'sfina, when you're dealing with a wagon or a boat, ema d'mafleg la l'sfinate, v'avid my deboy. Maybe he'll retreat to his boat and do what he wants in the boat. The fear here is that he has a way or an excuse possibly to retreat into the boat, take the barrels there, he'll close the boat up, and then he'll start doing what he wants to do over there. And they can claim that he can make the excuse that I'm taking care of the matters on the boat, I was fixing this on the boat. He has excuses that he can come up with to be on the boat. So you would be afraid that he's going to either move the boat or retreat to the boat in a way that wouldn't allow you access anymore, and therefore it would be asur. V'itana b'koron b'sfina mishum d'sabar d'ma'ati b'urchachriti v'kayaguda v'chazali. So again, if he's maflig, if he retreats into the boat, he pulls up the plank or the ramp, and he's on the boat, so maybe over there the reason it's mutar is because you can still gain visual access to him from different points. He's afraid he might show up somewhere else on the dock. He might look from the mountain above, and he can see down. There are viewpoints, or there are access points by which he can have visibility into the boat, and that's the reason there's still fear there. Based on Yerushalmi, many Rishonim point out that if he actually does set sail or pull the boat out, then it would be problematic. And the mitigating force here is that he won't set sail or he won't pull out because the Jew could notice him or see him pulling out or moving away from the dock. And given that, he won't take that risk knowing that. But if he has a reason that he needs to move away from the dock, or he can explain that, then he will have a problem, because then he has moved away and he is secluded, and that would be a problem for the Jew, because the Jew can only on a macro level see whether he did or did not depart. We're not suggesting that he has the ability to see into the boat, even if he has departed. And for that reason, as long as he hasn't set sail, then we don't have to worry about it. But, maybe he'll close the door, or he'll retreat to a corner and do what he wants over there. He can find privacy over there where the Baal HaBayit doesn't have visibility to him. He can't surprise him anymore. Kamash Malon, that he's still fearful of doing such a thing because the Baal HaBayit can appear at any time. That causes enough fear. So the Mishnah gives you incrementally more and more chidushim along the way, that where you would think that he goy is in a more secure position in each of these cases, and yet the Mishnah says despite that security, you still have the mitigating factor of Yotzei v'Nichnas, or the fear that is associated. Amar Rabba Bar Chana, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Machloket b'shel Sid. The Machloket in the Mishnah is when you use lime as the sealant. Aval b'shel Tit, if you use clay as the sealant, Divrei Akol, everybody agrees, Kadei Sheiftach, V'igof, V'igof. Everybody agrees, even the Chachamim agree, that the test is like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel's test, which is the amount to open the entire thing, to seal it, and then for it to dry. What Rabbi Yochanan is pointing out, at least in this view, is that seed or lime is something where you could drill a hole, then you could have it sealed up and dry in a way that it's not distinguishable from the remainder of the sealant. It dries fast enough and in a way that makes it very similar to that which is around it. On the other hand, when you deal with clay or teat, if you drill a hole in it, the amount of time it takes to dry and the discoloration that happens will make it that it's easy to see that there's a hole made here and the hole was sealed up. That's the case of Chachamim agree with Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. The hole is not a reasonable access to the item because as soon as the guy comes back, he'll see that you made the hole and you tried to seal it up. And therefore, you have to have enough time to unseal the entire amount and reseal it again. So that's the point that Rabbi Yochanan is saying is the material of sealant makes a difference. That if the material is something that can be replaced quickly, then a hole is sufficient, according to the Tanakama or the Chachamim. Whereas if it's a material that cannot be made in a way that would be similar to the stuff around it, then you would need to remove the entire thing, and then everybody would agree to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel's requirement that you remove the entire sealant. Meitve. We have a problem is that we have a conversation between Rabbi Shimon Gamliel and the Chachamim, which is Amar Rabbi Shimon Gamliel and the Chachamim. Halo stumo nikar, ben milamalo, ben milamato. Isn't the sealant visible both from outside and from inside? That means that there's a difference when you seal or plug a hole. There's both a difference externally, which means that from the outside you can tell the coloration, discoloration, or you can tell that it's more moist on the outside. Also, once you've taken the cork and the sealant out, inside the sealant you can see that this was done differently than the other part of the sealant. Because when you plug the hole, the material goes deeper in, and then there's going to be something that looks different on the inside of the sealant. If Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is saying this to the Chachamim, and their machloket is about tit, that's true by clay. By clay, the sealant is visible both on the outside and on the inside. When you plug the clay, you can't get it to be the same color as the clay around it. And in addition, when you look from the inside, it won't be exactly flush with the remainder of the sealant on the inside. Eliyamar Bishel Sid Machloket, if you tell us that the Machloket is about lime, Bishlam Alamata Yidia, you're right, down below, internally you can tell the difference because you can't get it to be exactly flush with the sealant. Elalamala, from outside, Halo Yidia, you cannot tell. The lime dries fast enough and is not differentiated enough from that which is around it that you could actually drill a hole, put the sealant in, and you would have no clue that it was done after the fact. And even though, as the Baal Tosfot point out, he could have explained the machloket just in the opposite direction, which is that the machloket is b'megufat shel tit, and that by shel sid, everyone agrees. Or you could say that the machloket both by sid and by tit, and then you wouldn't have this problem at all. What the Baal Tosfot say is, they must have had a mesorah, gemara gemiri law, that this was the way that their machloket was set up, and therefore they have to deal with whatever the ramifications of setting up the machloket in this manner are. So Mar says, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, who, to lo yudia my kamri rabbonan. The truth is that the machloket is only about sid and not tit, Despite that fact, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is speaking to them about clay, even though they agree with him, because he doesn't know what their opinion is. And that is, this is what Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is saying to them. If you're speaking about clay, stumo nikar ben milamala ben milamato, then it's visible both from the outside and the inside. If your opinion is about the lime, you're right, externally it's not visible, but internally it is visible. And then that's where Rabbi Yochanan says their machloket is. And therefore the Rabbanan's response to me is, Rabbanan came into lamala lo yudia, lo mesika daite de apik vechozilei. Since on the outside it's not discernible, he doesn't think to look at the sealant from the inside. When you break the seal, if you see there's something tampered with on the outside, then you look on the outside and then you'll check on the inside or double check on the inside to see if something was tampered with. On the other hand, if the sealant looks perfect on the outside, there's no reason for you to suspect anything. And therefore, even though it's different on the inside, you're not going to take the time or even think to look on the inside. There's nothing that arouses your suspicion. So you break the seal and you take it off. You're not going to search the inside of the sealant to see if it's all flush. Inami zimnin decholim. Or there's some times where it turns out to be flush, just by chance. There are times where the line could work out and it comes flush with the other amounts. You can see Rashi over here translates the word chalim as saldir, to solder, to join parts together. So here also, or the sealant could be flush by chance that it happens that way, and then you won't be able to discern it. For that reason, by lime, we worry about the fact that he drilled a hole and then sealed it up, even though internally it won't be flush, or it will be discernible. The Chachamim say we don't worry about that, but Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says it's always discernible, at least on the inside. Chachamim say that's not always true. Sometimes it's not discernible because it's flush, and sometimes it's not discernible because he just doesn't think about checking it because there's nothing on the outside that arouses his suspicion. For that reason, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel says you need to have the ability to take the whole sealant off because it's discernible. Chachamim say that it's close enough and it's not going to create a problem, and he'll take the risk of drilling a hole to access it. So Amar Rava, halacha k'Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. Ho, but it's not stamak avate. Rava says the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, because our stam Mishnah is like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. It's not. At the end of our Mishnah, it says, Haya uchel ala shulchanimo, v'niach lagin ala shulchan. He was eating on the table with him, and he left the pitchers on the table. Lagin ala dulbuki, or he left him on the sidebar, the credenza. V'niach v'yatza. And he left him with that, and he left. Mashal shulchan asur, what's on the table is for sure asur. Mashal dulbuki mutar, that which is on the sidebar is fine. He says to him, go ahead, dilute, drink as much as you want. That seems to be he's giving him additional permissions, because he didn't need to say that. The fact that he's sitting there, he's going to drink the wine. The fact that he gave him additional permissions makes him feel more free or independent in his doing what he wants to. Even that which is on the credenza is problematic. Chaviot, tuchot, asurot, any open barrels are problematic. Stumot, mutarot, the ones that are sealed are mutar. Today shiftach vigo fitigo. The amount of time it takes to unseal the entire sealant, reseal it, and have it dry. So you see here that the last piece of the Mishnah is the opinion of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. It's stam ki Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. Where it says pshita. What's Rava telling us? It's pretty clear that the end of the Mishnah is giving us Rabbi Shimon Gamliel's opinion. It's stam kavate. Maudateima kula Rabbi Shimon Gamliel ktani lo. You would think that Rabbi Shimon Gamliel wrote the whole thing. Kamash malan, that's not the case. In the case before, it ends off with Rabbi Shimon Gamliel kadei shiftach et hachavit v'gofit digof. Then haya uchel imo l'shulchan. That's the next line in the Mishnah. You could have thought that Rabbi Shimon Gamliel continued to speak to the end of the Mishnah. In that case, you don't have any proof that it's stam Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, because it's Rabbi Shimon Gamliel speaking. It's not a stam Mishnah. The Kamash Malan is that the Rabbi Shimon Gamliel speaking in the last part of the previous case in the Mishnah, that's all he said, was his little piece there. And now the latter piece in the Mishnah is a piece that was stam Mishnah, not said by Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, and it's stam kivate. Now the Gemara comes to a conclusion. Bichi ma'achar, the kaimalon kavate, the Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, now that we establish that we follow the position of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, the lo chayish lishtuma, he doesn't worry about drilling holes into the item. The hilkato kavate, the Rabbi Eliezer, and the loch is like Rabbi Eliezer, who we saw earlier in the Masechta, the lo chayish lizyufa, that we don't worry about tampering or people trying to falsify a seal or people trying to forge a seal or a sealant. Hayidna, my time, alo motvinan chamra biyadov de kuchavim. How come today we don't hand over our barrels or let the Ovdei Kochavim interact with our wines? So now Rabbi Eliezer was speaking about the fact that if you have a single seal on the item, that is sufficient. You don't need a double seal. And the reason being that Rashi says before, it's too much of a tircha. It's too difficult, it's too much of an undertaking for him to break the seal and then reforge the seal, even when it is a single seal. It's just not worth his time or his efforts, and therefore we don't believe he will do that. So now if you combine Rabbi Shimon Gamliel and Rabbi Eliezer, you have no chashash over here. You don't have a chashash of a hole being drilled in. Only worry about the fact that he will take off the entire sealant. And Rabbi Eliezer says he's not going to make the effort to do that. It's not worth his time and effort to take off the sealant and then try to forge it just to take a little wine or to touch the wine. If you combine those two, we should be able to allow the Ovdei Kochavim with a single seal to deal with our barrels or to deal with our wine without any problem. My answer is Mishum Shaicho. Rashi explains over here that the Shaicha is Nekev Dak Me'od. It's a very small hole, Shibim Gufata Chavit, that is in the sealant around the cover of the barrel, Le'ot Re'ach Hayayin Yotzei, so that the aroma or the smell of the wine can escape through there. V'yesh L'cho Shema Yikadeach Sham B'Miksat or B'Meineket V'Tomin Hayayin. You have to fear there is that he's going to expand the existing hole. There's a hole there already. So all he will do is expand the hole, and that will give him access to drinking it or coming into contact with it. Or the gears of Rashi and the Rif, and the gears of some others, is that he puts it in a neket, which is some sort of siphon or syringe that will pull the wine up through that hole. Or the way that the Aruch explains it over here, you can see it's in the Bali Tosafot, Rashi gar shaycha b'kaf, shum sha'ayin nimshach v'yotzei derech sham, u'b'oruch garos shiva b'bet. Hashem Barzak Tana Shesot Mimoto Behu. It's a small tap with which they seal it off or they cut it off. From there it sounds like it's a tap. If you look back at the Bali Tosafot back on Samach Vavam and Bet in Batia, over there, the Bali Tosafot explained that the Batia, according to the Aruch, was a piping that allowed the gases from the fermentation to escape. So it wasn't for smell, it was done to give an escape valve for the pressure inside the barrel, and that's what it was doing there. But then you'd have to then describe either expansion of that hole, or using that hole to access the wine through a syringe, siphon, or some other straw. That would be the problem, because there are existing holes. So that's the issue that we're faced with, that either there's a tap, a hole of some sort, or some accessibility to the wine, where you could do it without having too much trouble, without having the problem breaking the seal or having to forge the seal. And it won't take much effort for him to do that, and that's what we're worried about with regards to our barrels. And from this, Gemara, you would come to the conclusion that a single seal is enough on a barrel. But if you look in the Bali Tosafot, he says, of Rabbi Inu Yitzchak ben Yehuda Sholach Rashi, that's one of the Rebbeim of Rashi that sent to Rashi, Dovka L'chaviot Shalem. That's only true in their Chaviot Shayu Shel Cheres, that were made out of clay, there it's sagi b'chotam echad, shal pi achavit. Aval b'chaviyot shelanu, in our barrels, shehem minisarim mechubarim ze lezeh, they're made out of wood planks that are put together. Av kishyesh chotam echad al pi achavit, even though there's a single seal on the chavit, mikom okom, yesh lachu shema yitchov al v'chavim chodo shel sakin b'nisarim, you have to fear that he'll stick a knife between the planks or the boards, o ben ashulayim, or on the base of the barrel, or even in the middle of a plank, you can wedge apart the boards and have the wine seep out or come out from there. The whole way that the barrel works is the bands keep pressure on the wood to hold them together. So if you can somehow release that pressure and allow it to come out, you can do that temporarily and then put it back. If you put a knife in, twist it a little bit, it'll open up, release some of that pressure between the boards, and allow the wine to come out. He can drink it, he can touch it. Then he pulls the knife out, and it looks like nothing's changed, nothing's happened there. And for that reason, a chotam achad is not enough for us. We need shtei chotamot, unlike the time of the Gemara, unlike the psak of the Gemara over here. Miu, on the other hand, the Tosafot says, near the Ri, chein lechalek ben chaviot shalem or chaviot shalem. There's no reason to distinguish between our barrels and their barrels. But he does qualify that with something which we saw earlier in the Bali Tosafot, which is just like with their barrels, it's good with one seal. So too by our barrels, it's with one seal. But that is Dafka Shechozer V'Roeyu. That's only when the seal is going to return to him. Because over there, you can then recognize if it was tampered with or touched. On the other hand, if he's sending it to a third party, and the person who sent it is not going to see it in the end, there you do need a double seal. Not because a single seal is not enough, but over there, the person on the other end doesn't know what he's looking at to know whether it was forged or changed. On the other hand, if he writes to him the description of the seal and exactly the nature of the seal, then you don't need a double seal, you only need a single seal in that case. That really goes back to a machloket we saw in the interpretation of the Gemara back on Daf Lamed Aleph. There was a machloket Rashi, the Rabbeinu Tam, and the Balei HaTosafot about how to explain the Gemara there with the Tzir and the Morius and what type of seal you needed. And obviously what we're speaking about here is a derivative of that as to when a Chotam Achad is sufficient. But then the Balei HaTosafot note, "V'gam minago lamaya, kvar lishloach yayin b'toch Chotam Achad b'lo chozer mikiro." The common practice today is to send things with a single seal, even if the party on the other end doesn't know it. Even though according to Rav back there, you need to be makir the chutam in order for that to work. We don't pass them like Rav back there, but like our Gemara over here. And therefore, a single seal will be sufficient even if the receiving party doesn't know the seal. Despite all of that, the chatkila one should be makpid on this. And that's why today, anytime we send something or kosher food or anything like that, we have it in a double seal because the person receiving it doesn't know what exactly to look for. That's why we use a double seal. Ach, b'diavad, en lafsid, kevendika chotam, afilu bloktab, umakiro, could appreciate. But b'diavad, if there's a hefseid merubah, or a hefseid at all, then it should be sufficient with one chotam, even without a letter explaining it, or even if the receiving party doesn't recognize it. Miu. Ein nachon, if ein oto chotam echad miotiot. It only works if that chotam is made up of letters or something that is complex. Ki im mibigufat tit. If on the other hand, it's just made up of a seal of material, you'd appreciate mibigufat tit chashiva chotam echad. As vadayinu mutar beloktavo hakara. Since a seal with just plaster or some other material that seals it in, that by itself is not sufficient because it's not complex enough, number one. And number two is, it is only considered to be a single seal. If you don't say that, nehi, the lochashin, the ziufa, well, that's Rabbi Eliezer's opinion. We don't worry about him making the effort to take off the seal and break it and then seal it up again. You come and go, me, na'ilanu shoto chavit, shel yayin. How do you know it's the same barrel of wine, shashalach lo chaveiro, that his friend sent? He got a sealed barrel, okay? So that he sent them a sealed barrel, but he has no idea whether it was the sealed barrel his friend sent or in another sealed barrel, then it could have been swapped out or exchanged. But if it's signed and sealed with letters, you don't have to worry about that because the only way somebody made these letters or made this type of writing is if a Jew did this. You shouldn't rely on this mukvashel tit. The way to do it properly is or hastima kavua bimasmirot. Similar to what the Balei HaTosafot said back on Daf Lamed Aleph, which is that you should seal it in, then put a leather piece around it that is nailed in. And then write letters that are half on the leather that is sealing the top, as in the other half are on the boards of the planks or the boards of the barrel. And that way, it's very hard to simulate or to replace if you take it off, because you can never align them exactly along the same way that they were aligned when it was put on. And number two is you have the seal that is nailed in of the leather piece that's around the stima on the top that makes it that he won't tamper with it. And in addition to that, v'tei chashuk shekorin tzirkula tzaviva gulim b'makom shemechuberim el dofnei achavit l'kovo sham b'masmerim. And then to put some sort of belting around where the barrels are sealed at the top and the bottom, over there you should put something around them that seals them in and nailed in. And you should cut off the taps, the gvaleim or b'masmerim, and then put leather on top of them with nails. And then you should also put either leather around there or boards that surround the whole bottom and the taps at the bottom so that they're not accessible. And that's the way the Rabbeinu Baruch said that you should do it. That again is all true. Just with the ceiling of the top of the chavit, that's enough. Because we don't worry about what the Rabbeinu Yitzchak Rabbi Yehuda said before, which is that our barrels are different than their barrels. Therefore, whatever was sufficient for their barrels was also sufficient for our barrels, bidyavad. And again, we should be choshesh for the sheet of Rabbeinu Baruch, because he said it. And then be choshesh for that shita in the Bayit HaSuppot. When he sends and does all of this complex sealing, he should send a letter describing what he did. Or if he's going to meet the wine on the other end, then that's fine. Perish Rashi v'Mishim Rashi, that all of this worry about the guy leaving and giving them time there, that's all when we worry about the fact that he's going to replace the wine with water, or he's going to put worse wine in there instead of the good wine. In a place where there's constant traffic, even if they're non-Jews, he's afraid to steal. Even if you tell him you're going away, it's mutar. We don't worry about the fact that he touched it. So this is the Tosafot, the Shita To. And this is Rashi, again, saying the similar thing, which is we're not worried about Maga anymore. We're only worried about either him taking out wine and replacing it with other wine or putting water in place of the wine. And that's a much more significant undertaking. We only worry about that if he's not in a place where there's traffic and people are going to look at him like, what's he doing here? Is he stealing? Is he a thief? But just the simple touching of the wine or even the desire to touch the wine and make it the nisuch, that's not relevant to our Avdei Kochavim today. That's true with items that only have very small openings. In a place where they have large openings, and in those cases, since the accessibility of touching them is very easy, and they do it even without even thinking about it, over there we do have to worry about Maga Obdei Kochavim, even though again we said that they're not like Obdei Avodah Zarah. Nevertheless, if we know that they're definitely going to come into contact with it, there will worry. If we have a mitigating factor, which is people passing by, the fact that it's sealed, then together, combined with the fact we don't think they're Obdei Avodah Zarah, and they haven't touched it, that's enough to say we're not going to worry about Maga in that case. Right, just to finish off here, Amar Rava, Zona Avodat Kochavim Yisrael Misubim Etzla, if you have a non-Jewish harlot, and there are Jewish men that are dining with her, chamra shori, then the wine is mutar at the table. Even though they have been overcome by their yetzer hara for arayot, meaning that they are lusting after this woman, they're willing to engage in illicit activities with this woman, nevertheless, yetzer d'yayin nesech lo takif lo. But with regards to yayin nesech, they don't have that type of yetzer. Or in essence, what the Gemara is saying is that they can decompartmentalize different issues. They may not be able to control themselves with regards to sleeping with the woman, but they are mentally able to deal with things like Yayin Nesech. And that is the complexity of people, that people can be mushkatot in one area, and yet be law-abiding citizens or halakhically upright people with regards to other matters. And that people are able to decompartmentalize these issues, and do the wrong thing in one place, but in the other place, do the right thing. We find that in the Gemara and Brachot as well, with the tevila that is needed for a Baal Keri. An individual can go and have illicit relationship or sleep with a woman, and then go to the mikveh to, in order to retire himself from Keri to go learn or to go be involved in Torah matters. You see that type of inconsistency that comes up in people. Rav Shmulevitz in Sichud Musar speaks about that in a number of memorot that are called Ha'or Ba'Choshech Shebadam, the light and darkness that coexist within a person, that a person is not all light and all dark. There are a lot of contradictions within people, and that light and dark live within the same people. Zona Yisraelit Ba'Obdei Kochavim Misubim. If you have a Jewish harlot, and the non-Jewish men are there to partake of her services, and they're sitting around and drinking wine, Chamra Asur. There the wine is Asur. My time, a whole, Bezila Alayu, Batrayo Greira, because she's already demeaned herself to sleep with these men, and she no longer has any status or stature in their eyes because she is a zonah, then also she's just going to be drawn after them to do whatever they want. She's just going to try to please them, and that means that she will not only give them their desires in terms of arayot, she'll also please them in terms of their yayin nesek, or their ability to touch the wine. And for that reason, you will have a different outcome depending on the scenario of parties that are involved in this. All right, we're going to stop here, three lines down on the top of Ayin Amud Aleph.